This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
I am Wong Xiaoning, and this is The Breakfast Grill. Iskandar Malaysia started with much fanfare in 2006 with the intention of creating an economic corridor taking advantage of Johor's location and proximity to Singapore. Flash forward to 2019, and this supposed international metropolis is more known for its property overhang and lack of quality investments. To see if there's any truth to this, we speak to Dato' Ismail Ibrahim, CEO of Iskandar Regional Development Authority, or IRDA. Morning, Dato'. Now let's talk about IRDA's vision. It's a strong and sustainable metropolis of international standing. But this was supposed to be achieved by 2025. So we've got like a mere 6 years to go. So how are you doing? Are you about 50, 60, 70% there?
Proudly say that based on our comprehensive plan, we project that the total committed investment by the year 2035 would be around 383 billion ringgit. As of June 2019, we have already breached the 300 billion of committed investment. So from that perspective, it shows that we are very much on track. And over the last 5 years, our growth have actually recorded a year-to-year of about 9%. This is very much higher than even the national growth. So from that perspective, it tells us that we have actually quite advanced in terms of economic growth. And there are many other indicators like employment, jobs, SMEs and all that. But from a social inclusiveness point of view, we must make sure that no one is left behind. We cannot let the people of Iskandar Malaysia in particular and the people of Johor in general to be left as only spectators. We want them to be involved positively.
Which is one of the criticisms if you go there. And I've been there a few times. The hardware is gorgeous, infrastructure is there, you've got some really nice buildings, housing. But it seems almost like a ghost town sometimes and doesn't feel like it's like Johorians really live there. So I wonder about this social inclusiveness that you've mentioned. The other thing also is when I look at some of the targets, one of which is your average household income. I think there's a 10,000 ringgit target by 2025. And the latest data I have, which is on 2014, the household target is still below that, around 6,000 plus. So how are we bridging that gap?
Well, we can look at from two perspectives. One is from the statistical point of view. Today, the average household income has actually more than double that, about 7,000 ringgit. Of course, the target is to achieve 10,000 per month. So from that statistical point of view, we are very confident we are very much in target. But it is not about just figures. It is about people's satisfaction in living, working by themselves or with the family. As you rightly say, what effort has been made to make sure that whilst the quality of the built environment is uplifted, but at the same time, we want to make sure that the people living and working in Iskandar Malaysia continue to be satisfied by the fact that the cost of living is well within control. We can ensure that the type of jobs that are being offered to the locals are of a higher productivity, hence of a higher salary.
But that's part of the shortfall, isn't it, Dato? Because when we look at the number of jobs created, I think there's like almost 800,000 jobs created since 2006. But the data is that 69% of that is low skill, which probably means not so well paid.
This is a long-term effort that we have to do continuously. We acknowledge this even at the very beginning of the Iskandar Malaysia initiative. And we have to admit, we have only been able to secure only about 35 or less percent that comprise of job opportunities for professionals as well as highly skilled. Our target is really by the year 2025 to have at least 45% of the workforce will be coming from jobs that are for professional and highly skilled. Now, this requires a close collaboration with the business community. That is why we've been very selective in bringing in investment into Iskandar Malaysia. We try as best as we can when investment come in, they must be the type of investment not only environmental friendly, but they are also capital intensive that would allow for the type of jobs that would cater for professionals and highly skilled workers.
But is there always going to be issue because Singapore is just next door? And I mean, if you're talking about salaries, dollar for dollar is the same, but we all know the exchange rate is times three, right? So for the same job, automatically I earn three times as much. Wouldn't I want to work in Singapore rather than in Iskander?
It's true. This is the challenge. And the Singapore factor is a very interesting story. Now, it has always been, even before Iskander days, that people in Johor in particular prefer to work in Singapore for the fact that they can earn a higher salary. Yet, they continue to live in Johor and spend freely. Yeah? But that time, the reason was different because there was no jobs being offered in Johor and the area of Iskandar, Malaysia, because there were not many investment coming in. But today, with the presence of many multinationals and even domestic business also thriving in Iskandar, Malaysia, it makes logical sense for the talent that are now working in Singapore to come back and work in Johor.
Do you have any numbers in terms of how many Malaysians have come back to Johor to work from Singapore then in the last 12 years of Iskandar?
The numbers as it stands today for Johorians in particular working in Singapore hovers around between 250,000 to 300,000. At this moment in time, we do not have a figure that can indicate accurately the number of Johorians that have decided to come back and work in Johor. But what we can say, by the number of companies, either international or local, that have decided to relocate as part of their expansion program into Iskandar, Malaysia, I cite an example, BMW and Volkswagen. They are the suppliers of parts for the Asia-Pacific.
Can you name some other catalytic projects or successes of Iskandar that are good examples of how IRDA has helped these businesses?
Well, for example, in healthcare, the number of private hospitals in Iskandar now have actually grown rather rapidly. We have now have got 12 private hospitals, six of which are, but they are already international, and the remaining half are international hospitals. And this create opportunities for local doctors and specialists to work in these hospitals. That, in my view, is a success story for Iskandar, Malaysia, because we are able to position Iskandar, Malaysia as the next healthcare hub that not only serves Malaysia, but more importantly, to serve the ASEAN region in particular. The other area is, of course, logistics, which have actually increased by more than 100% over the last 12 months, because logistics is a very important support as well as creating jobs as well as opportunities for local businesses.
But would you say you still have a long way to go? Because if I look at the invested amount, right, for healthcare, it's close to only 4 billion and then logistics is only close to 7 billion. So it doesn't seem like very large sums.
Yes, we still have a long way to go. And like they say, Rome is not created in 6 days. So 12 years actually along the road is not really a time that we are able to measure on our success. But we are working very hard on this one. But the two economic sector that I quoted just now actually represents the service sector. Now, if you compare service sector's investment, definitely the capex is a lot lower if you compare to manufacturing. However, the multiplier effect is very high.
And Dato, since you brought up the multiplier effect, I want to ask as a taxpayer, because Iskandar, Malaysia is funded by government money, right? The initial infrastructure costs and all that, right? So I'm curious, how much government money has been spent on Iskandar since inception? Are we taxpayers getting our money's worth in terms of a multiplier effect?
When we look at the role of government, we do not wish to see the government involved in the economic of things. We do not want to see government involved in the actual business. We only see the government involvement in laying down the region with the right infrastructure to create the right ecosystem to make this region attractive for investment, for jobs, as well as for businesses. So over the last 12 years, we've been able to work with the central agency, and up to date, the government has put in more than 11 billion worth of, I call, investment into Iskandar Malaysia in the form of roads, in the form of connectivity, in maritime, in aviation, and all the rest. This is all an effort to make sure that when we talk to potential investors, we are able to show and demonstrate to them that the government is doing their part in laying down the ecosystem for Iskandar Malaysia. Now, if you compare the 11 billion of government's investment to the 302 billion that we have been able to bring committed investment, it gives a ratio of more than 1:24. Now, that alone tells us that for every ringgit that the government puts in, we have been able to bring 24 times more from the private sector.
But this 300 billion, is it committed or is it actual spent already?
Up to today, from the 302 billion as of June of committed investment, 57% of them has already been realized. And the number of realized projects is measured based on a true auditing figures. In other words, we have to make sure that money is really spent. And even committed investment, this is not something that we take from whatever figures that has been declared by investors. We only take over a period of, say, 1 or 2 years ahead. So in other words, even if an investor declares that they're going to invest 100 billion worth of investment, we only take maybe 10 billion, because 10 billion is a more appropriate level of measure rather than taking the whole of the 100 billion, which may take 20 or 30 years to be realized.
But then, Dato, based on realized, so there's slightly more than half. So what are the chances that some of these businesses don't spend the money? Or even if they do spend the money and they have invested, but they suddenly want to pull out, for example, Pinewood Studios?
Well, when you deal with a region like Iskandar Malaysia, we are faced with global challenge. There are things that happen globally that definitely beyond our control.
You're listening to The Breakfast Grill, where I'm speaking to Dato' Ismail Ibrahim, CEO of IRDA. After we come back, we will discuss the all-important Singapore-Malaysia ties and if that is the key to Iskandar Malaysia's success. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to The BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to The Breakfast Grill, where I'm speaking to Dato' Ismail Ibrahim, CEO of IRDA. Earlier, we were discussing the role of this government agency and whether the region had met its objective. Let's talk about property. Got 14 billion ringgit of unsold units, the worst in the country. Now, I know property isn't a sector of focus for IRDA, but it also accounts for more than half of the 300 over billion of investments committed.
As you rightly say, property or residential development is not a promoted sector in Iskandar Malaysia. So in normal circumstances, we would allow for landowners and developer to decide. But what went wrong? What has happened? It's about the matching. What that has been developed are properties that relates to the premium at the higher level, which is beyond the means and affordability of those people who are really in need. And it makes sense, therefore, for developers to take a look again at the types of houses they build to make sure that these houses are really for those that are really in need. We are now working with some of developers to see how they can break down the size of their units. Because at this moment, because the units are too big in terms of size, maybe they can make two instead of one, and therefore they are able to offer at a price that are reasonable and affordable by the institution. Secondly, is maybe to review some of the policies of the government that relates to housing in order to help to address some of these issues.
Would this be some of the bumi quotas, because you've got the highest in the country, right?
That could be one of the areas in which we are looking and reviewing. For instance, when we talk about purchasing units that is allocated for Bumiputra, if the intention is to help Bumiputra, then in our view, it is not necessary for the title of that property to be stamped as such. You may offer at a price that is for the Bumiputra, but it's up to the Bumiputra to make that property available after a certain number of years. This has been the practice in many other states.
What about at the time of sale? Because one of the issues is that there's a lot of bumi units which remain unsold at this current juncture, yes, right? And the release time is too long, some of the developers argue.
I agree with you. So this is the thing that we have to deal with, not only in terms of the pricing and the policy intervention, but also in dealing with the time taken to process applicants.
Do you think this oversupply is a question of lack of coordination? Because land is still a state matter in Iskandar, Malaysia. You compete with the state for property development. So some of the largest developments in Johor Bahru are like Country Garden, Forest City, RNF Princess Cove, which just add to the overhang. And if you drive along those project sites, you're almost overwhelmed by the number of units.
Yes, it's true. That is why in addressing some of the issues, we, not to say that we are leaving things entirely with the state government to solve it. I know they have the right people and to discuss about things. And I'm sure they are very much close to the issue at hand.
Let's shift our discussion now to Singapore. Early vision was for Singapore to be Hong Kong and Iskandar to be Shenzhen. But since then, some big Singapore projects have been mothballed. And more worrying for me, the annual bilateral meeting on Iskandar between Malaysia and Singapore government has been postponed in January. So with frosty ties at this juncture, can Iskandar Malaysia ever reach its full potential?
The Singapore factor is something that we cannot dispute nor deny. In fact, to a certain extent, we have to admit that if not for Singapore, Iskandar Malaysia might not be as prosperous as what it has turned into today. But situation with Singapore, if you look at it as an overview, has actually improved from what it was before, more than 10 years ago. Why do I say that? It is running along three levels of engagement. Number one is government to government. It is now a lot warmer than before. Of course, there are disputes here and there, but the overall, you know, development is more of a warmer ties. This is reflected by some of the engagement that ministers do, even though they are about settling disputes, but at least they are talking to one another. Second is business to business. Of course, business to business, it has been going on even before Iskandar Malaysia days. But today, you can see a lot of that business merging and getting more hype into it. But of course, when you talk about business, relocating and whatnot, it takes time for them to make that all-important decision. Number three is about people to people. I think, again, there's a lot warmer ties between people to people. This by the fact that we continue to see a lot of Singaporean coming into Johor to do their weekend shopping.
There's no more worries about crime at one time. That was a big complaint.
The early days, I must admit, is true. In fact, crime was the top three concerns of people, not only in Johor, but also from Singapore. But now, crime has actually gone down the ranking. They are only now talking about how much it costs to do business, what are the encumbrances that would normally be faced if you want to relocate and whatnot. But so crime now is a matter that is well, you know, down the list of concerns.
What about accessibility though? Because people complain about the time it takes to get to Singapore and, you know, minimum 2 hours on a causeway, sometimes up to 4 hours. And we've had delays in high-speed rail, rapid train system. If we don't resolve these issues, can Iskandar prosper?
I must admit that for one to prosper with the other relies very heavily on how we create a seamless link between Singapore and into Johor, particularly into Iskandar, Malaysia. We agree with the view that this is a long-standing issue. And the more we delay, the more it will create barriers towards this growth and prosperity. That is why we have always been in discussion. And we are also talking now about having a single co-located CIQ instead of two CIQ now. But what perhaps is the critical thing is to tackle the issue of security. There's always this concern about what if you introduce something. Let's say if you introduce technology by way of facial recognition and car registration accident. That is technology. And this technology has been widely used all over the world. Mexico and US, they have been using this technology. But the question is, to what extent are Singapore and Malaysia agree to use this technology without compromising on security?
How close are we to agreeing, do you think, Dato?
I would say very close. In fact, we got to know that Singapore is already introducing that. But of course, Singapore cannot introduce that all by themselves. They need to get, you know, some kind of agreement with Malaysia.
But we've been talking about all these issues for the last easily 10 years, right?
And you are absolutely
right.
And
we don't seem to be, we seem to be making two steps forward, one step back, and hardly making any progress, actually.
Well, in the past, if you say that there is a delay, I would agree, because delay is without any discussion at all. But today, we can see that there are a lot of discussion going on, and Singapore side is always willing to discuss with Malaysian side. But some of these are central government matters.
So has there been a change in the tone because we've had a new government since May last year?
Not that I noticed of. This current government is also of the view that Singapore is a very important factor in as far as Iskandar is concerned. And they are also working their level best to make sure that some of this issue needs to be tackled.
So did you get any new KPIs from this government then?
Well, we have been able to go on at two levels. Number one is to continue what we already been doing based on the comprehensive plan. And of course, we got new mandate and new directive. For instance, in one of earlier discussion with our chairman, which is the Prime Minister, he has indicated that we should move into a new economic sector that is in modern farming.
That's an interesting discussion for another day as we've run out of time. On that note, thank you, Dato' Ismail, for spending time with us to tell us about IRDA and its vision for Iskandar, Malaysia. I'm Wong Xiaoning for The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, Frost & Sullivan's Malaysia Mobile Service Provider of the Year.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.